the Dorkadia podcast. This is Megan Spur.
Hannah Goldberg Craig.
Charles Spur.
And John Spangler.
No, you're right. That fucked with me, too. That's not how it's supposed to go.
Just go in a circle. How hard is that?
But you're supposed to bookend it. It's supposed to be bookended by Spurs. That's how we always do it. And now you're deviating from how we always do it, and I'm really confused.
Surrounded by Spurs.
I think of you as parentheses to...
Parentheses?
Get out. Never mind.
I don't know. I like that one.
No, get out. Then you're both fired.
I'll jump on that sinking ship. So we spent the time before hitting record reviewing the Indie Mega Booth, which has been the Indie Mega Booth website for PAX West, which has been historically my favorite part of the expo floor. I mean, I love the spectacle and seeing all of the crazy shit that the other big corporations are bringing, but when it comes to games, I'm usually mostly invested in the indie games.
Yeah, I pretty much spend, like, we were lucky enough to get in an hour early for a media hour, which is usually spending time with the large name, you know, big booths that I would never wait that long in line for, mostly because I just don't have the patience for it.
Yeah.
So I usually check those out in that time period, and then almost uniformly you can find me the rest of PAX hanging out the Indie Mega Booth. So going through and looking at a bunch of the trailers for games that they've, you know, announced that are going to be there. Also, the Dorkadia intern is just really interested in the microphone again today. So, you know.
Yeah, well,
sorry in advance for that.
It ends up with those nice thuds every time she touches the...
To be fair, that's the experience of hanging out with her as well as she, as she falls off of various surfaces throughout your home.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
She's very sweet, and she's very energetic. She's not the most graceful cat I've ever met.
Nope. New Dorkadia intern has made me very happy that I invested in pet insurance. Not a lot of self-preservation going on with this
one. She commits.
Yeah.
She does. Full bodily.
Yeah.
She commits.
Yeah. I'm getting upstairs. One way or another.
Yeah.
I'll learn how to fly if I don't make this landing. So.
Yes.
Anyways, okay, back to PAX.
She flattened herself and went under the couch. It's
yeah,
fine.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, back to PAX.
Yes.
We opened up a bunch of the trailers, and because you guys left me with the mouse, I'm going to pick and choose the ones that we want to talk about for the time being.
Yes.
So, first up, Spiritfarer.
Yes.
So, we saw this at E3, I want to say.
And it was just like a little teaser. Right.
Yeah, there wasn't, I mean, I would say it was a little bit more than a teaser. This trailer was definitely expanded a little bit, but yeah, we have a better idea of what the game is about now, which is, you know, dying.
You are the boatman collecting spirits from these various islands in this beautiful hand-drawn game.
Boatwoman, sorry.
In this beautiful hand-drawn game, and you have to, I guess, explore and build relationships with those individuals and eventually probably ferry them off to a final resting point.
Yeah, it's a game about learning how, well, it's so it's a resource management game that is also about learning how to say goodbye.
Yeah.
I don't it's gorgeous. It's absolutely beautiful. Megan described it as very Miyazaki, which it has definitely got that like Studio Ghibli kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm going to be able to play it because it looks like it's going to make me cry a little bit too much, but it is absolutely beautiful.
Two-player co-op.
Yeah, because the other person plays the kitten.
Yes.
Yeah.
I highly recommend checking out the trailer. We'll link this in the show notes, but it is a beautiful game. And I think that it's definitely, it looks like it fits Megan's bill of, is it going to make me cry a bunch? Then yes.
I mean, just this description, spend relaxing quality time with your spirit passengers, creating lasting memories, and ultimately learn how to say goodbye to your cherished friends. What will you leave behind? Good Lord.
Woof. Yes. They're like, hey, what game would Megan like? As long as you're telling me, like, compelling stories about each of these people that we have to say goodbye to, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
All in.
I would say the create lasting memories and the fact that the thumbnail is a musical parade. Oh, God.
Yes.
So that's a big thumbs up.
Yeah, so our show notes this week are just a series of trailers.
Yeah.
Yes.
So just go on over and see everything we're talking about.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to be at PAX West, still highly recommend checking these out. I mean,
In fact, I would actually recommend going to indiemegabooth.com anyway. Because as we were going through these trailers before recording, what a good one-third to one-half of the games are out already. It's great that they're getting publicity at PAX.
Yeah.
They should get in front of people and, like, sell their game. But if you want just a curated selection of indie games that are available right now, go to indiemegabooth.com.
Most of the games that we're talking about are not currently out,
yes.
Because we actually decided not to talk about all the games we are interested in that are currently out, and there were a ton.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were quite a few, so... and it also, you get an idea of when stuff is going to be released if you're interested. So I also think that's a fantastic idea. It's a really nice curated list. So what's next one?
Well, I want to sneak in before we move on to the next one. As we were looking through all of these trailers, I was bowled over by how gorgeous all of these games look. Like, just on average, I think maybe it's just money coming into the field, or just the tools are getting better, or this happens to be, like, a particularly, like, artist-heavy crop of, like, curated indie games or something. But these games look fucking fabulous. Like, so many different styles that are so polished and so good.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a lot has changed in the world of indie games. For the longest time, please bear in mind, this could be me also not necessarily giving indies the respects that they deserved at the time, but it felt not polished. It felt not complete. It felt less like a game that had as much dedicated to it. And that's probably more my bias than anything. But
well,
I'm also seeing that, you know, we can do more now. And it's, so I'm spending more time looking at it. I'm seeing more beauty in this. I'm seeing compelling storytelling, and I'm seeing stuff that I care a lot about. I don't know if I saw that there before. So that doesn't... Sorry.
Oh, no, I think a big part of it is that retro platformers are finally done.
Yes. I was just going to say, even last year, there were games... Last year, 2018, there were games in the Indie Mega Booth that had artifacting and, like, flashing sprites to emulate the NES's limitations. Last year. And I'm like, come on, man. Like, I like pixel graphics. I like lo-fi graphics. I like weirdo presentations.
And there are a couple in here.
Yeah.
There are absolutely a couple. Not everything is, like, you know, beautifully hand-drawn or, like, exceptionally 3D rendered. Like, there are a couple in here that have some really creative or, like, are very retro style.
Yeah, Spiritfarer is very hand-drawn looking.
Yeah.
Very, like, I don't know, late 70s, early 80s Disney.
Yeah.
I kind of think Robin Hood when I look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don Bluth, yeah.
Little Don Bluthy, but just a little bit higher quality, because it's just a little smoother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, the thing I realized looking at these trailers is that the default choice to make something lo-fi is probably over now.
Yeah.
Like, and I get it. For business reasons, it makes sense, too. Like, it's not easier to make low-poly graphics, or not necessarily even low-poly, but, like, low-resolution graphics. It's not easier at all. It's just less overhead.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. I guess that trend to default to NES is over, which is great.
I hope that it means that artists are getting paid more and are getting more gigs because they deserve it, because these are beautiful, beautiful games.
Yeah. Now you can tell a lot of money was put behind these.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be coming to Gamescom as well, so we might even see more of it before it hits
Spirit
PAX. Yeah.
Nice.
Awesome.
Okay, sorry, I was just poking that in because we started with Spirit.
Which is one of the prettier games, for sure.
Darn Europeans getting the jump on us.
Oh yeah, let's do this one. It's the opposite of what we just talked about.
I think Charles and John are both pretty interested in Until You Fall.
Yeah, it's VR sword fighting.
Yeah, it's, first of all, it's from the people who made I Expect You to Die, which was a really fun game. They have a really good grasp on how to use environmental space in VR. So I'm interested in how that's going to translate into them doing a more just action-heavy thing with sword fighting. Dual-handed sword fighting, like, it looks like it just prompts you for blocks, when to attack, so...
It looks pretty action-packed, multiple enemies at a time in an arena. You can move around, you can use, like, abilities and magic spells and stuff, like...
Yeah, I couldn't tell what the movement was.
Which is a big
question. Yeah, it looked kind of like it was dash attacks and being able to, like, dodge.
Yeah.
I don't think you have, like, free range movement.
Yeah, so it looks really good, and the notes on the Indie Mega Booth site make it clear that there's going to be, like, a lot of upgrades and a lot of, like, challenge runs and stuff. Like, it looks like a game you could play with your buddies, and not only that, but, like, play for a while single player, instead of it just being what I've seen a lot of VR games be, which doesn't mean it's all of it. Like, I don't have a lot of experience with VR games, but a lot of VR games that I've played boil down to very focused experiences that are, when they're over, they're over.
They're very one note.
Yes. And this does not seem to appear to be like that kind of game.
It reminds me a little bit of sword fighting Beat Saber.
Yeah. I think it's taking a lot of cues.
I the trailer very strongly reminded me of that. I also like to point out that one of their notes is they have a driving synthwave soundtrack to keep you fighting, although they're not sure if it should be called synthwave or swordwave.
I would listen to swordwave and not admit it.
I would listen to it unironically, entirely unironically. So yeah, that should actually be pretty fun. I'm really curious about trying that. I've definitely always dreamed of, like, you know, an actual hack and slash where I could hack and slash. Like, I don't know. I did fencing when I was younger. It was so much fun. I'd love to be able to kind of, obviously this isn't the same experience, but a similar experience, right? Like,
yeah.
It's fun. Like, who hasn't played a fantasy game or read a fantasy book and be like, I fucking want to hack and slash something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, unlock special weapons with, like, unique traits and stuff. Like,
yeah, that's
it just
cool.
It just seems like there's some meat to chew on there.
Yeah.
The only reason why I'm not excited by this, because I care a lot about VR, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Charles and I, obviously, are early adopters in VR. It's the thing that I'm interested least in VR.
Mm-hmm.
I really care about world building and immersiveness,
mm-hmm,
and storytelling in that. The ability to take you out of your personal environment and to put you into that space. Like, I don't know if it's necessary for a hack and slash. I don't know if not to say it's not necessary, I guess. It's just that I'm not as interested in that. I don't find that as,
I mean, if it's just a genre you're not into, it's a genre you're not into.
No,
like,
and, like,
you know.
That's not, I don't want to, like, say that this looks bad or anything like that. It's just the only reason why I'm not super excited by it. It's just it's the one thing in VR that I'm less interested in.
I think especially as someone who's interested in the longevity of VR, even if you're not into it, games like this are going to be a very important part of keeping VR around.
Oh, absolutely, right. More people getting into it, you know, more opportunities, yes.
And innovating new styles of gameplay that can be worked into greater games,
mm-hmm,
right? Like, if you had the sword fighting mechanic and or like some of the mage mechanics that we've seen in other games wrapped into, like, a VR Dragon Age game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, we've been seeing it with the game Vader Immortal.
Mm-hmm.
So you're telling a Star Wars story where you're partnering with Darth Vader. And there's definitely some lightsaber fighting happening there. So I get it. It's just this is that part minus story.
Yeah.
But I also know that not everyone wants a story that's going to make you cry inside of your VR helmet and then make you fry your brain.
Also, surprisingly, not a lot of people, you know, there are, I shouldn't say not a lot of people, there are people who don't care as much about story in games and just want to, you know, go and hack and slash something.
Yeah. Those people are crazy.
Or maybe they think you're crazy for partaking of entertainment that makes you cry.
Also,
six and one, half dozen the other.
On that specific note, there are so many smoochy romance games this year.
There are so many smoochy romance games this year. Let's talk about
my favorite one.
Daters. Is that your favorite one?
Yes!
Yeah! All right, we're on the same page.
Because I fell in love with Dream Daddy,
mm-hmm,
and it was the idea of just the slightly non-conventional but still a dating sim, which was dads dating other dads. This is dating set inside of, as the newest resident of ye old retirement community. Befriend a host of intriguing seniors who will have their own unique philosophies on life and love to share. Yes. Yep. Uh-huh. I'm so excited.
This is such a cool idea because this is, One of the other things that I'm seeing reflected very strongly in the Indie Mega Booth this year, and it's been ramping up every single year, but I think this year it's just, like, really exploded, is that idea of diversity in games and telling different stories with different casts of characters and characters that don't all look the same and have different body types and skin tones and everything. And this game is such a good example of that because it is a diverse cast of old people. And you know what gamers really don't pay a lot of attention to? Old people. Right? Like, this is a chance to, like, put yourself in such a different perspective. One that a lot of younger people try really, really hard not to think about. Like, aging. Yeah. Aging can be scary. And you just, I know quite a few people our age and younger, you know, 30s, early 40s, who, you know, might say kind of disparaging stuff about older people. I bitch about boomers every single day at work because they're a huge part of the audience that I communicate to through my work, and it gets really frustrating. But the idea of being able to explore different perspectives through gaming is so important, and doing that in this, like, really adorable, really interesting, like, dating sim style, it also just, there's this whole other conversation about this just, like, second generation or third generation of dating sims that are breaking away from what the traditional limitations of the genre, which were all about, like, you know, picking your best waifu and how Western creators and younger Eastern creators have, like, come together to make these just, like, innovative and, like, genre-breaking games that are for everybody and allow you to do all this really interesting stuff. Later Daters, amazing example of that. Super excited for it.
Yep.
I think, God, Megan and I will probably go there very early in the weekend and be like, tell us everything about your game.
All the things. Yep. Mm-hmm. I want this. It just looks...
Oh, God, and there's a dog in one of the pictures. Oh, that dog looks so cute.
Yep. I'm in.
Can you pet it?
I'll have to go to Twitter and find out.
Okay, so next up, Backbone is a beautiful noir looking. You are a raccoon private eye.
In anthropomorphic Vancouver.
Yep.
Where I don't know if the note specifies it, but what the different species denote the class struggles inside of fuzzy Vancouver, I guess.
Fuzzy Vancouver.
I didn't say furry Vancouver. That was a different connotation.
To be fair, there are, like, animal strip clubs and exotic dancers and such in this game.
There's
going to
be. Yeah. There's going to be some dames.
There's some dames, yeah. But it's so gorgeous. And, like, and this is pixel art, like we were talking. Like, it's, you know, it's just nice to see a different style of pixel art. And we started to see a lot of this last year. And I think that's definitely continued this year. This actually reminds me a lot of another pixel art noir detective game from last year.
Tales from the Neon Sea.
Yes, thank you very much. Which was also gorgeous, but this one has one of the most detailed backgrounds. The background of this is not pixel art. It's just hand-drawn or rendered backgrounds that are just gorgeous.
It actually makes me wonder whatever happened to a game we saw at E3, I think, 2 years ago.
Deal with the ship flying down and everything.
Yeah, it was called... I think it was called something like The Last Night.
Yeah, that was vaporware.
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
No, Backbone looks good. It looks like a legit mystery game where you're fucking around with clues and bits of paper and you're trying to uncover the truth and pick locks and have adventure game inventory. It looks like a pretty standard adventure game, but the note on the trailer specifically says they're inspired by, like, more old-school computer RPGs with, like, the branching conversation paths, which should prove to be super fun.
Yeah, and a really cool note on this one is the prologue is out right now, and it's free. So this is one of those ones where if it sounds interesting, you can go play it right now.
Yeah, so it's not out, but it has a demo.
Okay, moving on.
The game Cat Lady looks fucking sick. This is actually my favorite visuals out of all the games that we saw. I understand it's not... it looks to be a top-down adventure game where you're trying to expel the demons out of your grandma's house. I don't know.
Your grandma's cat. Filled mansion.
Yes, and it looks so startling, so stark, very, like Hannah said before when we were watching the trailer, very Undertale.
Very Earthbound.
Very Earthbound.
Yeah.
And adorable with a good sense of humor. The trailer is, like a lot of the trailers this year in the Indie Mega Booth, is frustratingly vague. Or not, maybe not vague, but frustratingly undetailed.
Yeah, it tells you absolutely nothing about this game.
There were quite a few trailers we noted this year, and this is one of them, where you just don't really get a good idea of what the gameplay is or what the point of the gameplay is. But that being said, for this game, it is so stylistically up my alley. It is so cute. Even the description of it is so evocative, and there's a part where she throws a cat, and then a bunch of demons come running after her, and it's just... it's so cute. And like Joan said, I really love the use of stark visuals in negative space. Mm-hmm. Also, interestingly, it's from Rose City Games, which I'm not that familiar with, and Viz, which is a name that's really familiar to any old school anime fans. Viz brings over a ton of manga.
Yeah.
So I did not know that they had anything that involved games, so.
Yeah, it looks intriguing, to
and
say the least.
Cute.
So cute. Definitely a game I'm going to get in front of immediately. Yeah. Like, I want to go see it.
So, one of the games that I'm really interested in, is Superliminal.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I don't know, how do we put this quickly? It's a... forced perspective puzzle game. So you are moving objects in the environment, and based on, it looks like based on the size they are when you select them.
So what happens is, and it's hard to explain without seeing the trailer. Highly recommend you go look at the trailer, because the moment you see it, you understand it.
Yeah.
But imagine if you held a block that a child was playing with, like with the letters on it that's in the trailer, up to your eye so it's closer to you. So it looks as big as the room in front of you. And if you let go of that block, it's actually the size of the room. What the game does is it takes your perspective and makes it real. So that by changing the context of the object that is floating in front of you in this first-person puzzle game, you change its size, orientation, whether or not it's... you can construct objects out of pictures as long as you align them correctly. I mean, it's bananas.
I hadn't seen this trailer before today, and so we were watching it, and everyone was super excited about it. I was like, well, it looks, as Megan said, like, it looks just like the Stanley Parable, and then it started fucking with perspective, and it just kind of blew my mind. Like, I've never seen gameplay like this, and it's kind of like, holy crap, I've never seen gameplay like this? Like, when you think about it, and when you see it in the trailer, it seems like, oh, wow, this is a great idea that's perfect for video games. It's a little crazy that it took Del Mal for somebody to think of it.
Yep.
But it's definitely, like, really just messing with, like, your own perspective as a player as well, which makes it a very interesting avenue for puzzles.
As a tech demo, it's been winning awards since 2014.
Yeah, I've seen people, like, I've seen streamers on YouTube play the tech demos. It feels a lot like Portal, where it's just like, oh, you could have explained this concept to me and I would have thought, oh, that's obvious for a game. And then you see it executed well and you're like, holy shit, why hasn't anyone done this yet?
You're right. It's really similar to Portal in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not in gameplay, it doesn't look like. Like, no, no, Portal's no. Portal's an action game. This is not an action game.
But in the same... I mean, Portal's an action game. It's also a puzzle game.
Oh, no, no. It's absolutely a puzzle game.
Yeah.
This seems less tracking momentum and shit. Like
that's... Yeah. There's less... Momentum. Yeah. You're absolutely right. But I do agree in like just the way of using gameplay mechanics in a way that you'd never be able to do outside of video games.
Yeah. And
innovating like with that.
And not only that, but like innovating in a way that like... we've talked about on the podcast before, Portal was a gateway drug to gaming for some folks. Yep. And that's because it's such an obvious good idea that keys into our human brain so effortlessly, it's just fun. So, Superliminal, from what I've seen, just seeing it looks like the same thing. Where it's like, oh, my brain is wired to do this automatically, and it's freaking me out.
If this was part of the orange box, I would have been like, okay, this fits here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it's really exciting. It's I can't wait to play it. It may come out one day.
Fingers crossed.
Oh yeah.
Haven looks like this very interesting game. This is another one where I'm not entirely sure what the gameplay is about.
Nope.
There's a lot of two people just kind of flying around this very gorgeous planet.
Yeah, I got kind of a Journey vibe off of it.
Yeah.
Well, and there's like an amount of JRPG combat in it.
Yeah, like the RPG combat looked like kind of simple and straightforward. But one of the things that really drew my attention, two of the things that really drew my attention about it are the dialogue scenes are kind of this combination of like two actual modeled characters interacting, but then it also pops up kind of a visual novel or dating sim style. Mm-hmm. Like two static characters exchanging dialogue, and then you go out in this beautiful world. This is another one of these like incredibly gorgeous like, not exactly low poly. Like, it's very Breath of the Wild-esque.
There you go.
Yeah.
Or like those Xeno games that are coming out for the Switch, whatever that is.
Oh, Xenoblade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only looks way better than Xenoblade, because Xenoblade looks like a pile of shit.
Yeah. Sometimes. But one of the things that really caught my attention right away about this, or I should say the other thing that caught my attention right away about this, is there's a ton of physical interaction between the two characters who are, in the game's description, two lovers. Share the journey of two lovers, escape to a lost planet in a desperate attempt to stay together. There's a ton of physical interaction between these two characters. Like, there's a point where they're doing this gliding thing through the map, and they're holding hands.
Yeah.
And I just feel like in a lot of games that do have romance, that casual physical interaction with each other is not something that we see a lot. Like, there's a combat scene where at the end of the combat, they just give each other a high five.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so thinking of, like, in Final Fantasy where everybody, like, does their own solo pose and da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, right. But everybody's, like, doing their own thing. And I love how these two characters interact, and they interact regularly. There's one scene...
outside of cutscenes.
Yes, outside of cutscenes. There's one scene where they're laying in bed together, and the one character has his back to the other character, and she's laying on her back, and she just has her hand on his hip, and I'm just like, I do that all the time with Eric. Like, that's,
Yeah.
So that one looks, also it looks like exploration is a big part of it, and I just adore exploration in games. So.
Yeah, in the 2-minute trailer, it managed to communicate a world about the two characters that you are going to be seeing go on this adventure. And it's compelling. It's two people on the run. Like, it's pretty good.
There is voiceover in it as well. So there will be active voice acting with it.
And it was good voice acting, too. And I have to say, like, there's a crop of really, really great voice actors right now. But I recognize almost all of their voices. They're voice actors that kind of have one voice.
Sure.
And I have heard them in multiple games that we've seen trailers for today. It was nice. These voice actors were very unique, and I liked their voices a lot. It was not so recognizable. Oh, she looks like Sailor Jupiter. That's why she looks familiar.
Yeah, she does.
She
looks
like Sailor Jupiter. So we're looking at a different game now, Super Crush KO, and we just realized how much the main character really looks like Sailor Jupiter.
And an alien stole your cat. Fuck.
Fuck that alien.
Right, so you gotta go out and punch everything.
Yeah, that really... oh my gosh, this is absolutely just Sailor Jupiter the game.
I mean, I'm down. She was my second favorite Sailor Senshi.
Who was your favorite?
Sailor Pluto.
All right.
Yeah. Pizza gives you uppercut slice. Pretzel gives you twister drill.
What character would I have needed to say that would have made us stop being friends?
Venus.
Oh, yeah, that's her. Sorry, Megan and I just had a moment. Super Crush KO is a side-scrolling beat-em-up in an art style I have never, ever, ever seen used for a side-scrolling beat-em-up. It's so... what would you call this art style? It's like vector anime?
It's kind of snipperclipsy.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. You have to unpack. What is snipperclipsy?
Snipperclips? That's the name of the game, right? Snipperclips.
The Switch game, right?
Yeah, the Switch game.
Yeah.
I am.
It's a Papercraft co-op puzzle game. That's very good.
Oh,
But it's Papercraft, right? Like, this looks like Eric Carle had some aggression to get out and made the very angry caterpillar.
Yeah.
And it's all in shoujo game color schemes, and like the characters are very like shoujo anime. I mean, obviously this main character is just Sailor Jupiter, but like even the anime, like the alien at the beginning, she looks a ton like some of the villains from Sailor Moon. Also a little monster prommy, but you know, very similar source material. So.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a bunch of punching, and Charles was saying that you can get different items that give you different kind of moves, like you get a pizza and you can do an uppercut. Is that?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
No, uppercut slice.
I like that the popcorn lets you attack in the air, and it's called Air Pop. Yeah, and it looks like it's about, like, getting a score and, you know, kind of keeping that beat-em-up flow going.
Yeah.
And it looks very smooth. It looks
saving your cat from aliens.
Yes.
Oh, you know what? I don't think it's actually scrolling. It's just, it's side to side, but I don't think that's actually a scroller.
I like that the art style specifically allows for clear communication of what is going on the screen, which, if this is a game about punching accurately and getting a high score, is going to be super important. Like, I think it's a great match.
Well, it is going to feature online leaderboards, so...
Yeah, naturally.
I love it because it's a very traditional, very common genre of game beat 'em up, brawler, but it is in an art style I would never expect from a beat 'em up. It's very feminine, it's very... Sailor Moon is literally in the background, I just noticed, upper left-hand corner.
Oh, yeah, she is.
That's straight up Sailor Moon. Alright. That tells you everything you need to know. This is a Sailor Moon game.
Wait, is it? Because I only see one hair.
I think the other one might be behind her back, but it's clearly some Sailor Moon analog, if not actually Sailor Moon.
Yeah.
It is a magical girl.
That's awesome.
That looks fun. I'm excited for that. I don't even like this kind of game, but Eric does, so I'm going to make him play it so I can watch.
Yeah, and just see all the ridiculous bosses and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the other game that I wanted to talk about, Luna.
Mm-hmm.
This game looks beautiful. So it reminds me a lot of, I want to say, like, Harold and the Purple Crayon and other types of animation that I would have seen on PBS as a kid. It looks like something that could have, like, if you pause any moment of this game, it looks like it was taken right out of a children's storybook.
Yeah.
It says it's 2D cinematics. I don't know how... There definitely feels depth to it to me, but...
It looks like a... Again, a number of games at the Indie Mega Booth website are just gorgeous adventure games. They are just like, we are focusing on the experience of playing our game and telling the story. And Luna's trailer does tell enough about what you're doing in the game, as opposed to a lot of others, where it is just a point-and-click adventure game.
Yeah.
That, Charles, you said that there isn't any dialogue in the game.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Everything is just going to be whatever you see on screen. Like, there's not going to be any dialogue to read. You're just going to have to interpret the actions of everything.
Yeah.
It's... Oh, and there's two playable. It could be a co-op? Or it just says two playable companions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Drawn together in a hand-animated puzzle adventure. I wonder if that is co-op, then.
I think it's the human character and the little dog.
Okay.
Working together.
It reminds me a little bit, just in sort of the vibe and the, like, dialogue-lessness of it, of Hob.
Yeah, I can see that.
Hmm, sure, okay.
What it really struck me as, because I'm looking at this beautiful imagery, and, I mean, yes, puzzle solving, but, you know, they're clearly telling some sort of story, but you were putting it together yourself because there is no narrative, there's no voice acting, and there's no words on the screen. I was saying it reminded me a bit of the card game Dixit, of like that beautiful art, and then you are left to interpret, you know, what you put some words to it, and then you have to decide who did what. But
no, it has that same surreal touch that Dixit.
Yeah.
Dixon has.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The kind of, like, almost abstractness of it.
Yeah.
If you could add music to Dixit, that's kind of what I pictured for this.
Yeah.
Anyways, it looks stunning. I can't wait to see more of it. Some of the notes that they have on here, a whopping 12 frames per second, you know, definitely, like, bringing that down low-key.
But when every single one of those 12 frames is absolutely stunningly, breathtakingly beautiful, I'll take 12 frames.
Three layers per frame, over 250 animations, and 20 minutes of cinematics. I mean, like, this...
And four dudes.
Yeah.
Four people.
That's crazy.
Yep.
I can't wait to play this game.
I mean, I appreciate a good point-and-click adventure game, so...
Yeah,
I will definitely be on this. Also, interesting to note that not only is this coming to PC, it's coming to iOS and Android.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We'll be mobile-friendly.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I think this would be a very good choice for an iPad.
Yeah, this will look gorgeous on an iPad.
Yeah.
Or a Chromebook or something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It still blows my mind a little bit when we see games like this, and then also coming to iOS and Android. Like, just my mental, what I process as a mobile game just does not translate to this style of game, and it really needs to.
Yeah.
And I play games, like, I've played games similar to this on my phone. It's just, it always feels a little weird.
Yeah, I always have a hard time getting away from, like, thinking all mobile games are Candy Crush, or Race for the Galaxy or something.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, not the elephant game.
Oh, John, you need to talk about the elephant game.
Quench looks awesome, actually. So, unfortunately, there's not a trailer for the game. So, it's a little unclear how the game plays. But you are guiding a gaggle of elephants. You're controlling, or no, not controlling, you're helping the leader of a gaggle of elephants.
You're a shepherd.
Help shaman the young elephants.
You become shepherd, an avatar of nature, and guide herds of animals on a perilous journey.
So you basically manipulate the environment to help guide these tribes of animals, and the first tribe that you start with are elephants.
And that's so good. And like I said before, the moment one bad thing happens to an elephant, I'm uninstalling the game. So
so I really love this description. Help shaman, the young elephant leader, convince the other animal tribes to join her. I'd like to point out this is very evocative because elephant is capitalized.
Yes.
Which is great. Protect your herds from flood, fire, drought, and dark smoke beasts that have spread across the land. Control the environment to guide herds of the animals and restore their home in this colorful narrative puzzle game. It looks really good. I love the idea of this, and I really love the manipulating the environment to help this. I do agree. There is a lot of calamity that can happen to these animals, and I'm not sure I can handle that.
Yep.
This coming to PC and Switch. This looks like a really fun Switch game.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God, especially with the Switch Lite.
Yep. No, it has that polygonal, abstract kind of vibe to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, perfect for the Switch.
Yeah. Oh, God, talk about another game that had absolutely gorgeous art. This style reminds me very, very much of Adventure Time, especially the kind of, like, post-apocalyptic aspects of Adventure Time. Mm-hmm. And this is Minute of Islands.
Yeah.
Do we think it's Minute of Islands or Minute of Islands?
I think it's probably Minute. Or maybe, what is a minute, a unit of islands?
It's like one minute like, of islands. Like a murder of islands.
Yes.
I have no idea. They call it a comic style adventure, but it's very, very Adventure Timey to me. But it's this very cool adventure. It markets itself as a transformational journey in a faltering world. And oh my God, the visuals on this game are super surreal and trippy. And there's a point where this, like, this mechanical tentacle comes out of the ground to, like, spawn some kind of communications array or something. But we're watching it, and it makes this very squishy, squelchy, organic noise.
Yeah.
And Megan just had the most visceral reaction.
No, I don't like that noise.
I saw her, like, fly back into the couch. But this is another one of those ones where you really need to see the trailer because the detail of the art style is just very, very cool. And the actual flow of the game is extremely polished and really, really gorgeous. Like, I really can't tell the difference between, like, the animated cinematics and the actual gameplay.
Right. It's really interesting visually because it really has the lighter colors and kind of pastels and clear lines of, like, Mobius illustrations, along with, by the end of the trailer, you're seeing some very grotesque imagery.
Yeah.
A lot of tentacles, a lot of biological elements, a lot of veins on stuff. Like, too much detail on objects to the point where it's gross.
It felt very Otomo, which is Akira. Oh. It felt very, like, Akira-esque.
Yeah. Yeah, so it has that crisp, clear style that works really well for what I imagine is ultimately a point-and-click adventure game. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah,
again, the trailer's not very clear.
Yeah, there's really not a ton of information.
Yeah.
But it's one of those games where I think the gameplay is a little bit secondary to the visuals.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's going to be about exploring and adventuring through this land that they have built. Also another Switch title, so I feel like it's going to be PC, Mac, Xbox One, PS4, and Switch.
Yep.
And this another one that looks like it'll be really fun on Switch.
Yeah, I'm super excited for it.
Any big name, like AAA stuff that you guys are interested in checking out at PAX this
year?
We
might talk about that a little bit more next week.
Yeah. I don't think there's a whole lot to talk about, but yeah.
I haven't gotten a chance to look at the floor plan yet. What AAA games are coming to PAX this year?
the one big one I want to mention is that, well, not one big one, but like the thing that Charles immediately brought to my attention when the app came out was that there are a lot of missing names from the floor plan.
Yeah, there are some big names that are just not represented this year at PAX. Twitch is not there. Microsoft doesn't have a floor presence. Though Microsoft is doing its traditional, like, pre-PAX ID at Xbox open house.
But Microsoft doesn't have a floor presence on the show floor?
They don't have booths.
That's surprising.
The big name that I'm surprised isn't here because of the geography is WotC, Wizards of the Coast is not present.
Well, they're not on the expo floor. The seventh floor of the Regency Hotel is all Magic the Gathering.
And it is not hosted by wizards. I don't really? I'm not going to say that 100% on my, like, that may be wrong. I think it's locally organized. I do not think Wizards is doing
it. I think we need to look into that further, because that would be a big deal, because WotC Wizards has paired with PAX for as long as I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, what, year 16 of PAX? So that would be a huge thing if they're not partnering with PAX at all.
Yep.
I'm surprised about Twitch. They have had a pretty huge floor presence for the last 3 years or so. Really blown away by Microsoft since we're in their backyard. That's a big shock. A little concerning, actually. I'm very curious what's up with that.
I can't say anything, guys.
I wasn't even looking at you! No. I'm well aware!
Okay, so Dungeons & Dragons does have a presence at PAX West this year.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing acquisitions, of course, obviously.
Yeah.
They're doing some more live shows, and they have a few panels that I think they may not be throwing, but they're going to be present for, like the extra Life and Child's Play gaming for charity thing. Yeah, it's a lot about people that are professional actors that play D&D.
But is WotC doing, is WotC handling all the Magic tournaments and that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's the thing I have to look up.
Okay, yeah.
So, things to also note, Google Stadia has a large booth.
That will be very interesting.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm very interested in trying that out.
Sony has a huge presence, considering they had no presence at E3.
Well, we now have Final Fantasy VII demo, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
And also, of course, there's a new Final Fantasy MMO expansion, and they usually bring a lot of support for that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I'm glad that game is still doing well. PAX West will be taking place, blah, 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 blah. If you plan to come, there are three main ways you can interact with Magic over the weekend, and they're a bit different than previous years. First, they have a panel on September 1st,
mm-hmm.
a world-building panel.
That's the normal PAX panel.
Yep. Second, there is a learn-to-play booth on the Skybridge.
Oh, interesting.
And then, if you want to play, we are running events with Mox Boarding House on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday evenings. If you've never been to the famous Mox Boarding House in Ballard, this is your opportunity.
That's fascinating. They're not running it at...
Yep.
This is a very...
Space is limited. No fucking shit. You're going to tell people at PAX to go to Mox? They're going to get fucked.
Yeah. I mean, at least tell them they're the boarding house. Like, at least the... I mean, it's further away, but the boarding house has more space, at least.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, yeah. They're not.
And that's so fascinating because PAX has added an entirely new venue this year of the Higher Regency.
Yep, where they have
all
the tabletop.
Yeah.
Yeah, like there's specifically on the floor plan for that floor, there is not a Wizards booth for Wizards merch. So, like, there won't be a place. There will be vendors for D&D books, obviously.
Of course.
But not the WotC booth to go buy your Magic cards and your D&D books straight from the source.
Your limited edition Funko Pops, which. Are the only Funko Pops I own. We just happened to pick up that group 1 year.
Yeah. The other two things I want to note, while Microsoft does not have a big booth presence on the expo floor, Mixer does.
Mm.
So there is going to be a Mixer presence there. And then Oculus. So again, VR gaming, which is owned by Facebook, so it would not shock me to see some of the Facebook gaming stuff there as well.
Yeah, fair.
So I think we're still going to see some representation of things.
I think it's actually interesting that they're putting Oculus on the expo floor as opposed to with the rest of the VR stuff in the Westin. It's getting away from being part of just the VR, like, sideshow sort of thing, and being main expo.
They're putting the money on it to putting it in front of more people.
And the Oculus booth is as big as the Capcom booth and the Ubisoft booth.
Like, which are always huge.
Yeah, it's enormous.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot I'm looking forward to this year. I mean, granted, again, like, 4/5 of my time will be at the Indie Mega booth, but...
You know, one of the things I'm actually really excited about this year was last year was the first play that I, it was the first year I ever explored any of the free play rooms. I spent a lot of time last year in the retro free play room because we had friends in from out of state that we don't get to see very often, and that's where they like to spend a lot of their time. And so we spent a lot of time in there. So I really want to do some more time in, like, the PC free play room and the console, especially the console one, because I don't have an Xbox, so I very rarely play Xbox games. The PS4 tends to live in my roommate's room more than out in our living room, so, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I'd really like to get a chance to play and not have to wait 4 hours in line on the expo hall floor for. I'm really excited to explore that a little bit more. I also want to try and gather friends up a little bit more to play games like Dixit, or, you know, some of, like, the interesting one-shot RPGs or that kind of thing.
Is there a tabletop free play area? Would that be the...
I believe that's going to be at the Regency, because they're putting basically all the tabletop stuff over at the Regency.
I think that's fucking awesome, to be perfectly honest with you. Like, I think the people that want to find that stuff will go seek it out anyway, mm-hmm. and it's going to be away from all the people and getting fucking Subway like idiots.
Yeah, so level 3 of the Regency is going to be the tabletop exhibitors, first look RPG zone. Level 4, tabletop free play.
Yep.
Oh, the entire... See, that's great. Yeah.
And then level 5 is tabletop HQ and library, whatever that is.
Check out the games.
Yeah.
Sure. Tabletop tourneys and free play as well on that floor. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I think...
I'm down for that. Although I don't know where the High Regency is.
It's not far away.
Like two
it's a brand new...
From the Paramount.
Oh my gosh, does it look like an evil building?
Wait, is that the one that has the weird, like, they don't actually... Like, the blocks?
Yeah.
And the blocks don't sit... Like, lined up? Or yep. Is that a different one?
No, you're thinking the same one.
Yeah, that's the right
it's
place.
It's a weird one where, like 5 to 10 floors are, like, this block, and then there's another block, but they don't line up, so the angles are weird. You're right, it is an evil building.
And it has like no windows.
It's like a supervillain HQ.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, if there was going to be a supervillain in this country, they live in Seattle. I mean, like, that's... There's
sure.
no sun and all the tech.
And yeah. Hilton would build their lair for them?
Yeah.
Probably. I wouldn't be surprised.
If it's that or Hyatt.
I'll go play RPGs in Obelisk. That sounds great.
Actually, that sounds like one of the better places to play an RPG. Also, the main theater is back to the Paramount. Fucking yay! While I'm a little bit sad that we won't hear that amazing super giant concert at Benaroya because the acoustics there are just phenomenal, I'm super happy that I don't have to walk
Sure.
I'm pretty happy. I love the main theater being the Paramount. I think it's just the most convenient.
Yeah, it was a bit of a hike to get to the Benaroya.
Yes, it was. It also, there were, not that I'm really super into any of the other concerts this year, it was a bad venue for the majority of the PAX acts. Like, it's just not a good venue for nerdcore, unsurprisingly. Benaroya Performance Hall, not really the place for nerdcore hip-hop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they're actually going to have seats on the main floor for the Paramount, or if it's just going to be standing room for the concerts.
Last time they did concerts there, it was standing room. It was standing room, and then if you wanted to sit, you'd go up into
the balcony. Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll see. Suffice to say, there is a lot at PAX this year. Mm-hmm. I believe we are also going to be recording Dorkadia's monumental 250th episode live from PAX. Well... We'll be recording it live. We're not putting it out live.
Yes.
Oh, God, no.
Oh, yeah. Try broadcasting from PAX. Getting signal to beam anything out?
Yeah. No,
that isn't happening.
No. When we say from PAX, it's really just here from the Batcave, like, what, 10 blocks away?
That is true. All right. So, we will have more about PAX, obviously, as mm-hmm. it's coming. And while we're there, just... Lots of hands-on time with games. Super excited about it. So, thank you for tuning in. You can catch us at Dorkadia.com, at Dorkadia on most social medias, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Music, Mixer. We would like a rating of 5 out of 5 what's?
Awesome-ass indie games?
Yeah.
Hand-drawn stories that'll make you cry?
Yeah.
Yes, we do, like...
5 out of 5 souls you need to say goodbye to after you get really attached.
Oh, good lord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
5 grotesque organic mechano beasts.
No, okay, you're fired. Get out. Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.